Welcome to Rockin' the Music World. I'm Robert Lloyd.
Get on the left, get on the right. Turn on the radio and join in the fight. Sort out the lies, seek out the truth. On the radio, they're giving the proof. You're gonna love it, hate it, it can confuse. First time you try it, it can give you the blues. But take my word, you can call and abuse. Just keep on talking news. Yeah.
Well, well, well. Hello, everybody, again. Yes. Oh, my. What a day. What a day. I hope you liked last week's show. I had a lot of fun doing it. Got a lot of good feedback. I just thought I should open the series of programs with Beethoven, and I'm glad I did. To revisit his life was so exciting, and people enjoyed it. Again, he was so outrageous, and he had such beautiful music, so powerful music. It was worth going over his life, and I think we're better people for knowing about him, and I'm a better person for understanding who he was and what it was that made him tick. And this show today is going to be totally different. I did mention that I did want to get into the modern era also. I'm going to cover everything about music, people that basically own the music world. And just this week there was news and some very bad news that back in the 90s when I was really, really hip on trying to get my music out, not that I'm not doing that anymore. I'm still in that position. But there were... We're going to talk about the music labels and the misinformation people have. Everybody that listens to music and you have a CD and you say, oh, this is this label is Jive Music or this is ABC Music or whatever. And everybody thinks, oh, there's just millions of record labels. No, there's not. No, there's not. And it really surprised me, too, when I found out about it. But just this week, there now is only 3 labels in the music world. 3 labels, for all intents and purposes. And they own about 70-80% of all the music in the whole world. Yes, just 3. I'll give you the 3. Number 1 is Sony Music. They say it's Japanese owned, but the head of it is, I think it's an Irishman. Who he is, I don't know. But at the same time, they're Vivendi owned, or somehow involved in Vivendi, which is also number 2 on my list, Warner Music Group, which Vivendi, Edgar Bronfman Jr. is the head of that. And then number 3, we got Universal Music. Once again, Vivendi owned, including EMI, which is owned by Citigroup as of September 21st. 2012, or EMI that's owned by Citigroup, now is part of Universal, part of Vivendi, but I really want to apologize for this show up front. This is so difficult to talk about who owns the music business. And you would think, well, millions of people own it. We got millions of artists. No. It's owned, controlled, lock, stock and barrel by a few individuals, and it's harder in heck to make out who knows what, who owns what. You go through sources on the internet, you go into Google, Wikipedia, you know, music sites, you go through all these things, the news clippings. Let me back up a little bit. I was talking about back in the late 90s when I was scratching my head who owned things and why am I having such trouble figuring things out here? There in 1998, there was the Big Six. It was Warner Music, EMI, Sony, BMG, Universal, PolyGram, and they owned everything. And I was outraged at this. Remember, I can't stand anybody having authority over me. I just can't stand it. You know, a lot of you people out there that are artists, some of you have to understand what I'm saying. You can't have somebody controlling you in order to create. And I'm not saying freedom to insult people and be vulgar or be profane or sexually explicit. I'm not talking about that. That's not freedom. That's slavery. I'm talking about freedom to express your music the way you want to. You want to have it perceived a certain way. You want it produced a certain way. And to have somebody in control of that over you is a terrible, terrible thing. If you're a creative individual, granted, we all have to live in this world, but I don't have to be too happy about it if somebody has control over me, and I won't allow it. Somebody can shut the radio off or shut the CD player off or your iPod, whatever you want to listen to music on. You can click it and delete me all you want. That's your right, because that is your right as an individual. But I don't want anybody telling me how I'm going to have, what songs I can write, and what type of songs I can write, and what I can write about and what I can't. But now, in 1998, we had the Big Six, and I was outraged at that. In 2012, we're down to three. And when they were gobbling up EMI, Universal had to get authority through the, you know, the anti-monopoly rigmarole in the federal government. And can you imagine they allowed that? Well, you know, I'm anti-government. I mean, just like our founding fathers were, they were anti-government. They knew the bigger the government, the more evil it was, because all government's evil. So the bigger the government, the more evil. The smaller the government, it might be a necessary evil, but at least it's small. Now we have a federal government that allows businesses to, you know, just like the Obama takeover of the insurance industry and all the different industries that were failing. And remember, they were too big to fail. Well, how did they ever get too big to fail? That was the antitrust people that should have years and many years ago stopped that. If there's one thing a government really should do, it's to stop the companies from buying each other and putting out a competition so destructive that it destroys any competition in the business. We always have to ensure a healthy, competitive industry, whatever industry we're in. Some of the industries are difficult. They're like a natural monopoly, such as natural gas coming to your house, or your electric coming to your house, although there's ways to even ensure competition there too. But there's some things that have to be somewhat controlled by the government because they have a natural monopoly. And if you want to understand that, you can't have three different gas companies, natural gas companies, laying pipes in the street. And you know, that just wouldn't work out. So there has to be some of that, but it has to be minor. But why did they allow these companies to get so big that they can't allow them to fail? The economy in the country would go down the drain if they failed. Well, my gosh, let us all drown. You know, if you aren't any good as a big conglomerate, you die and that's it. Just like if you're a small one, you die. You know, most everybody that works for companies work for small companies. And we've all gone through companies that went out of business and stuff. The big companies are actually a minority of hires in the world. And yet somehow they have this thing about them that, oh, we can't let them go belly up because it would hurt everybody. Bull. You have to allow that. If you can't go out of business, you become a government. And remember, government is evil. It will never do anything right. So anyway, I want to tell you a little bit about, first of all, the three. Sony, again, is, they say, Japanese owned. But I'm not going to buy that. Warner Music Group, Edgar Bronfman, Jewish guy, and his CEO is a Lyor Cohen. It's Lyor, and I'm just flat out going to tell you, I call him Lyor Cohen. And I don't know if he's just stepped down or what. I mean, to keep up with this is a nightmare. Then you've got Universal Music, again with EMI coming into it, and the CEO is a Lucian Grange. I don't know what he is. I did some studying on who he is. Have no idea. That, you know, they don't want to let you know too much about him. I'm very suspicious if you know what that means. His president is a Zach Horowitz. And they won't tell you what he is, but I have a good feeling what he is. And, of course, these are all geniuses that we should be very proud to be part of in whatever company they are. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, over also with Universal, the last 10 years, Vivendi, the CEO is Jean-Bernard Levy. Now, if the CEO was Jean-Francois Dubois. And his ancestry, of course, is unknown. But Jean-Bernard Levy, I mean, we probably can guess that one. My word. Oh, Robert, turn the page. Move on. Move on. We have to get through this. This is going to be one heck of a show, folks. And I'm going to be going all over the place because there's no way to organize this. I mean, I'm an organized person. To a fault. I mean, I don't do anything about making a list and checking it twice. I mean, I work during the day from a list. If I don't make a list, I get nothing done. If I make a list, look out world. And I'm going through this stuff, and how am I going to organize it? Anyway, in the U.S., these three big pigs, we'll call them, they have 80%. Of our market. A little less worldwide because, well, you face it, the Arabs are probably, the Muslims aren't going to let the Jews control their music, or at least you would think that, or the Chinese might, you know, the Chinese are Chinese. So it's that type of thing. So anyway, to give you an idea of the big three, and you think you got this CD, oh, isn't it nice? This is a small record label, and they got this huge star on there, and they're selling millions of copies of this. Isn't this nice? I hope my son grows up, and he can start his own record label, and it's going to be so nice. Hold on. For instance, pardon my voice here. I'm so choked up here. Let's talk about Sony. Who is Sony? Well, Sony is Columbia. Sony is RCA. Hold on. Sony is Epic. Oh, here we go. Sony is Sony Music Nashville. We're going to talk about that now. Oh, wait a second. And there is Sony is Verity Gospel Music. Sounds interesting. Okay, let's go to Warner. Warner Music Group. They're at Atlantic. Oh, wait a second. Isn't Atlantic a big one? Warner Brothers. Rhino. Warner Music Nashville. There it is again, folks. Hold on. Hold on now. Now let's go to Universal. They are. This is just some of them now, folks. This goes on. This is a web. I'm just starting with the spider here, but the web is huge. And it's not just a little corner of your house. This web is World Wide Web. Talking about a World Wide Web, this is it. Universal is Interscope, Geffen. You know Geffen, who also is with DreamWorks? Oh, he's also part of Universal. What's going on here? A&M, Herb Alpert, if you remember. Def Jam, Mercury, Motown, Universal Group Nashville. I love that. Well, that's coming, folks. Hold on now. Mercury Nashville, Decca. Remember Decca and the executives, the experts in the music world in what 1962 said when the Beatles were auditioning. They looked at the Beatles and went, groups with guitars are on, we don't like the sound. Groups with guitars are on their way out. And that was the end of the Beatles with Decca. Can you imagine experts now? The next time you hear somebody being an expert, if you hear me calling me an expert, be on guard, please. Okay, we got Decca, and then we got Polydor, and that's just some of Universal. And then these companies have a million different companies. And then once in a while you'll hear a musician say, yeah, I'm with such and such a record label. We're distributing through blah, blah, blah. They're not doing anything. They can't do anything because they have to be distributed through those big three. The big three controls distribution, and that's where it's at. And our Jewish friends know it, and they have it, and that's just the way it is. Now, I'm going to cover some of those other instances here in a few minutes. Let's talk about the music business and where it's at. You know, we got the radio. It's on the internet. On times, YouTube is big on that. It's interesting, though, with YouTube, you're just giving your music away. I've got one of my songs on YouTube. If you ever look for Going Back to Richmond, you'll see a YouTube about that with me. It's about the Old South and during the war between the states, and it was pretty nicely done. Did it about 10 years ago or so, and one of my favorite songs I've ever written, and I was able to premiere it in Richmond, Virginia, at a Southern Conference of intellectuals, and I got a standing ovation. We put it up on a big screen and played it, and it's pretty outrageous. So anyway, Going Back to Richmond, just do a search on YouTube, and you'll find it there, and I hope you like it. But let's talk about where the music is now, where we see it. Let's talk about TV with the music industry. You see American Idol and America's Got Talent and a few others. Before I go to American Idol, let's go to America's Got Talent. I don't watch that very much, but you know, once in a while I'll flip it on a TV. I flip the channels just a little bit and then I get sick of it and don't watch. I record just about everything I watch because then I just go through the commercials. I don't have to watch commercials, and I only watch exactly what I want in a sense. I mean, as much as you can find it. So anyway, once in a while I'll look at America's Got Talent. I'll see it there and see if there's anything interesting. It's interesting. Right now they've got three judges, and these three judges, of course, are judging. They're the judges of America. Who are these three judges? I think this is important for us to know. Who are these three judges? Howard Stern. Oh, well, he's an expert. If he's hearing a song or seeing the talent, I mean, he's a super talented guy. Howard Stern is Jewish as you can get. He is profane as you can get, as immoral as you can get, destructive of a cultural individual as you'd ever want to have, flat out offensive. And he's one of the three judges on America's Got Talent. He's an expert. This is what we have. We don't have any control over it. Let's see. Then we got Howie Mandel, the game show host. Howie's a Jew. Now, how a game show host is an expert at reviewing musical talent, and because you know most of the stuff's still musical talent, even though there's other type of things on there. But this Jew is the expert. And then we have one more. We got three judges. Two out of the three now are Jewish. I mean, I think that's kind of strange. I mean, they're only 2% of the population, but they're already 66.6% of the talent on America's Got Talent are the judges. The next one is Sharon Osbourne, Ozzy Osbourne's wife. Oh, wait a second. Her name is actually, her maiden name is Sharon Levy. Oh, man. She's Jewish, too. Oh, wait a second here. Robert, what are you telling us? That all three of the judges on America's Got Talent, all three of them are Jewish? And they're only 2% of the population in the United States, but they're 100% of the judges on America's Got Talent. They're telling us what is and is not. Nothing we can say can do anything about it. What? There wasn't a single Gentile they could have hired, even for one of the positions, but all of them had to be basically non-musical talented Jews. Sharon's not a musician. She married a musician, not a very good one, but you know, and her dad was a Jewish manager, and she stole Ozzy to manage his company, and she stole him from her dad, and it was quite a commotion, as I understand. Some hard feelings there, because Ozzy does sell music. I don't know why. Who would actually listen to it? I don't know. We don't, on this show, we don't listen to music like that. We listen to music. So anyway, now let's look at American Idol. And who's the big cheese on that? Who kind of made that show? Simon Cowell. You had Simon Cowell as one of the judges. You had Randy Jackson, a black man, who actually is a bass player. So I have to give him some credit. A bass player. He played bass on Judy in the Skies and do-do-do-do. And that's wonderful bass. I remember as a kid listening to it thinking, man, that's pretty cool bass. And why would you do that on a song unless it really stood out nice? I heard it in an auditorium one time where music acts were coming in. They were playing that music as filler music. And man, it sounded so good. Anyway, but he was playing the bass on that recording. To me, that's kind of the claim to fame. He was in, When the Lights Go Down in the City. I can't remember the group. I'm just pulling a blank here, but you know who it is. Was it Stephen Perry was the lead singer? I guess he's kind of a nutty guy, but he came as a bass player when another bass player left. And, that's his kind of claim to fame. And he's one of the, judges on American Idol. And then the third judge, now this is the judges that were around for a long time that kind of made the show, Paula Abdul. So, that's interesting. Now on American Idol, you've got three judges, the same as America's Got Talent. Okay, you've got a black judge, a bass player, he's a producer. But outside of that, I haven't heard any great songs he's ever written. I haven't heard a song he has sang. Songwriter, whatever. I mean, I'm sorry. I haven't heard anything on there. He's just a know-it-all. He's somewhat of a likable guy, married to a white woman, of course. So that's one judge. Then Simon and then Paula are the other two. Well, Simon, guess what? Jewish. Paula. Guess what? Jewish. Robert, are you telling us that of the six judges that judge us, America, five out of six are Jewish? That is what I'm telling you, folks. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Simon Cowell. He once the show got really big and stuff, he renegotiated his contract with American Idol. And here's how much he made when his contract was extended and rewritten. He made $33 million per season, and he had a five-year contract. That's $33 million, folks. I live in South Florida where people are losing their homes. They don't have jobs because our friends, they'll go nameless right now, you know who I'm talking about, that own all the businesses because it's collusion in everything they do. Our jobs have been placed overseas, and our people don't have any money. They don't have jobs, and they can't pay their mortgage to the same people we're talking about again. And they're losing their homes. And Simon Cowell, in just 1 year, makes $33 million. Let me tell you who Simon Cowell is. Here's how they word it. His father was from a mostly Jewish family. Well, isn't that nice? Well, he was mostly Jewish, but he's over here. He's got some Irish in him. He's got this and that. A mostly Jewish. You know, okay. So Simon, he's not a musician. He doesn't sing. He has no talent. He's arrogant. He is entertaining. I enjoy his outrageousness. I'm kind of outrageous myself, but don't tell anybody. But anyway, I kind of enjoy it when he was. In fact, I enjoyed it more when he was on. I didn't agree with him all the time. He has fairly good taste in talent, but it's not on my level anyway. And of course, we all think we're the best. So listeners out there can say right now, yeah, not my level either. Yeah, Robert's right. He's not my level. But, I mean, that's just the way I feel about it. He's not spot on all the time. So, anyway, he was from this mostly Jewish family. And so his dad, he had a series of jobs, in as late teens and early 20s. And he had a series of jobs, and it appears that his employers would get a little tired of him, and he'd have to switch jobs on occasion. I mean, can you imagine having Simon Cowell washing dishes for you in your restaurant? I mean, no. I mean, or selling spark plugs for you in an auto parts store? No. I mean, he's a jerk. You're not going to be able to put up with it. So his dad was a executive with EMI, the mostly Jewish family dad. So of course he's with EMI. So he gets Simon a job because on his dad's coattails, he puts him in with an A&R guy, and he's just a flunky assistant, and he moved up from there. But that's where he got his job. He couldn't have knocked on EMI's door and said, "Could I fill out an application? I'd like to have a job here." Nobody would have hired him. No way. His dad. He had the... he's no goy. He had the... the kosher in on this one, and he got in. So anyway, it's unbelievable. You know, I didn't know Paula Abdul was Jewish until I started reading this. Now, some of these things, like you can go, for instance, you can go to the website Jewwatch. It's Jewwatch.com, and it's fascinating to read through it. It's a little harsh at times. I mean, they don't pull any punches, and it's not something women probably want to go to, but the men that are strong, they can just absolutely take the truth. Go to JewWatch.com. That's when you're not listening to the white network, of course. But some things, their lists that they make are Jewish people. They're not necessarily Jewish people. Some like they had on there Dan Blocker of Bonanza fame, you know, Big Hoss. They said he was Jewish. Well, I looked it up, and Hoss is not Jewish. Everything I read about him supports him not being Jewish. And I didn't think he was. Now, Lauren Green was. Michael Landon was. So two of the four people on Bonanza, Pernell Roberts is not, and Dan Blocker was not. Lauren Green was, the dad, and Little Joe, Michael Landon, were Jewish. So 50% of those people right there were Jewish. And I was a kid back then, and I watched many episodes of Bonanza, and I loved the show. It really painted a positive family values picture. And I loved the show, and I enjoyed Lauren Green as Pa, and I enjoyed Michael Landon as Little Joe. I mean, you know, just because we're white nationalists doesn't mean we have to hate everybody, and we don't. We're just saying, but my gosh, what is going on here? Why aren't there more of us in this business? I mean, so anyway, getting back. So Paula Abdul, I believe she's Jewish too. If it turns out that once in a while I'll name somebody that might not be, I'm sorry. It's tough finding this information, folks, and it's not all our fault. And in Jew Watch, I've seen a few things where I think they've made a mistake. But then again, they might have some information that I couldn't find, so I'm not really sure. Most everything they have is actual factual. And you can just absolutely count on anything I'm going to be telling you, I'm going to be factual on this. People can call me a lot of things, but I will never lie to you. I consider you family. If you're listening to this show, I virtually consider you family. And I wouldn't want to lie to my wife or my daughter. And I wouldn't lie to friends. I might be wrong. You never know about that. I could be wrong, but I would not intentionally be wrong. And there's a big difference. Otherwise, a politician will intentionally lie to you or mislead you, tell you a half-truth. A half-truth is a lie, too. But I will not do that. I will tell you what I absolutely think is the truth. And if you have somebody that will do that, I think we're in pretty good shape at that point. And I try to be truthful. At least I give 100% of what I think is 100% truth. And once in a while I could be wrong. So we'll just live with that. The music labels, before we go further, I just want to give you a little bit here. They're notorious. So many of them are Jewish in nature. Over and over and over, in the 40s and 50s, the Jews were at the head of these things, and it was difficult to compete with them. Here's something that happened in July of 2000. Somebody I'd really admire, by the way. Remember Roger McGinn? Roger McGinn was the leader of the rock band The Byrds. Remember them? To everything, turn, turn, turn. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man. Remember he had the little granny glasses, and he had the 12-string Rickenbacker. And David Crosby was in the group. It was plumb full of talented people, and Roger McGinn was the leader of that. And anyway, in 2000, July, he had to give testimony in front of a U.S. Senate subcommittee about the things that go on in the record business that just don't make sense. And do you know, he testified under oath, and I'll believe Roger McGinn, he testified under oath, that the Byrds never received any royalties for their two biggest hits, Mr. Tambourine Man and Turn, Turn, Turn. Those were huge, huge hit songs, folks. And the Byrds and Roger McGinn with his 12-string, they played them. They had the harmonies. It was beautiful. Now, Turn, Turn, Turn was written by Pete Seeger. If you ever heard Pete Seeger sing it, you'd wonder, how did that ever become a hit? And if you ever heard Bob Dylan who wrote Mr. Tambourine Man sing Mr. Tambourine Man, you'd go, how could that ever have been a hit? But when you hear the Birds do it in their kind of acoustic rock sound with that 12-string guitar ringing out, it was a thing of beauty. It was powerful in its own right, not in the hard rock, stupid stuff that it's like 90% of music today. I'm talking, this was super powerful, melodic, harmonic, gorgeous stuff, and it was kind of America's answer to the Beatles in a lot of ways. And they were very much respected, and they sold millions. And they had other hits too, but we're going to just talk about those just for a second. They testified on this that they never received a penny. And folks, this happens so much in the music business. And you know, I was going to tell you about the country music labels. And you know, remember, we've only got three labels, music labels in the whole world, basically. Everybody else is just little bitty pickings. And in the whole world, 20-30% of the rest of the CDs are sold out of people's, you know, trunk and stuff like that. I mean, it's just these big three own everything, and they're gods in the business. And everybody tries to get signed with one of these groups or one of these music groups because they're gods, and you're just a little guy, and you have to have this or you're never going to be anything. Then remember last week when we were talking about things, and I started talking about the Christian music, the contemporary music of the last 20 years that have turned our Christian faith upside down. They are making beautiful hit music now, hit songs. We have Christian songwriters, Christian musicians, Christian singers. You know, we have the greatest venues in the world to play at, our churches. Some of the churches have absolutely beautiful sound quality. You have a built-in audience. It's the greatest thing in the world. In the last 20 years, this sprang out of nowhere. Talking about God's miracles, folks. Here was a miracle. And here is the rest of the story. I was so excited in the 90s. Christian record labels, and most of them are located in Nashville. Nashville isn't just country music. Nashville does music of all types. They have great studios there. Let's talk about some of these Christian record labels, and I had to learn this, and it was a dagger in my heart. Let's talk about one of the biggies, Reunion Records. Some of you Christians out there with contemporary music CDs, you recognize Reunion, owned by Sony. Okay, let's talk another one. Word. That's a big one. Look on your CDs. You'll see Word on your Christian contemporary CDs. A lot of you go over right now while we're talking here and check some of your labels there. Word, owned by Warner. Wow. Okay, Mike Curb. Mike's a Christian. He started his own record label, Curb Records. They're not strictly Christian, but they have a lot of Christians on there. But Curb can't distribute the music. Nope, they're distributed by Word. Oh, well, that's not too bad, but Word is a Christian label. And who owns Word? Warner. And who owns Warner? Oh, we know the people that own Warner. So it's just thing after thing after thing. Some years back in one of the music magazines, and I pick up one of the music magazines, industry magazines, because you'd be surprised what you learn from those things. Some of the quotes you get are just so interesting. Oh, geez, I got to hurry up here. We're running out of time here. We only have an hour here. A president of one of the Christian labels was quoted about, you have major label out of New York City owns your your label? Are you really not a Christian label anymore? He says, oh no, they leave us alone. We can run our label as we want to. Well, I wonder, Mr. Christian President, if he'd make an anti-Semitic remark, how long he'd be president of their record label, and if they had poker face on their record label, how long that president would be president? For you people who don't know Poker Face, they're Christians and they're rockers. So anyway, the Bronfmans who own Warner, since we're talking about them, their family fortune came through Seagram's, you know, an alcoholic manufacturing company. They're huge, and that's where they made their zillions. He's kind of divested himself from that in the last years. He thinks he's a very important, you know, smart music person, so he's delved into that. And he bought Warner Music Group in 2004, after basically destroying Seagram's. Yeah, that's another story altogether. We'll kind of leave that alone. So the Bronfmans are a Jewish family. I first became aware of them when I at one time I lived in Sarasota, and just north of us in Bradenton is the Tropicana Corporation. Big factories there, orange juice processing, and they make the Tropicana orange juice. And it runs the city of Bradenton. I mean, so many people work in that plant. And that's owned by Seagram's. And Seagram's aren't us. We're us, they are them, and we're goys. They're the Chosenites, and the two shall never mix, I wish. Well, let's talk about CD sales. A high back in 1997, 1 billion units of music were sold. In 2010, 13 years later, only 400 million units were sold. That's amazing. I'm going to cover that more here in a little bit. But the music business is in decline. If you listen to the radio, you would know why. I mean, think about the music that you hear. If you want to hear good music, get on a Christian contemporary radio show. You're going to hear a lot better music than you're going to hear on that secular stuff that gives you all this garbage and things that really you don't want to be associated with people that you don't want to be associated with, Lil Wayne and stuff like that. Read about that guy, So anyway, with all this condensing going on, now we're down to three biggies, and of course the sales are down. I mean, you don't have melody much in the music anymore anyway. And so I mentioned the Nashville labels.
Yes, I admit.
Nashville was owned by Nashville. Some of the old families in Nashville owned the record labels for it. I mean, that's propelled that industry, and that's what made Nashville great. Until the 90s. Just like the Christian contemporary labels in Nashville, the country labels fell. All of them, just like the Christian labels, they all fell. Let me give you some examples. Here we go. Warner Brothers, Nashville. It's Warner Brothers, Nashville. It's not just Warner Brothers, Nashville. But who owns it? Warner Brothers, Warner Music Group owns it. Arista, Nashville. Arista, Nashville is Sony owned. B&A, now called Columbia, Nashville, owned by Sony. MCA, Nashville. Sony Music Nashville. Are you getting the idea, folks? If you're thinking your child wants to grow up in the music business and become a music professional or somehow get into the record business, talk them out of it. Talk them out of it. I'm gonna just so you understand the prevalence of this. And you might know some of these might be not Christians, but this is going to surprise you. I'm going to give you a list here. Some of the Jewish people in the record business at the top of my list. Brian Epstein. That a lot of you recognize that. Got to be a little older, of course. He was the Beatles' manager. He basically discovered the Beatles. He's a homosexual Jew. He's dead now. I believe he committed suicide. He was born into money. His dad owned department stores in England. He worked the record department, and he had people coming in asking for Beatle records, and they were unknown. He didn't know who they were. So that starts that. Mark Knopfler, Dire Straits. Paula Abdul, I mentioned. Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. Remember that? Herb is Jewish. At least that's what I found out on some of the sites I took. And some of these could be wrong. I don't think so. Benny Goodman. Sammy Davis Jr. was a convert. I suppose the Jews laugh about that one. Edie Gourmet and Steve Lawrence. Edie Gourmet and Steve Lawrence. They're the ones that sing the Christmas music. Yes, you didn't know they didn't believe in Christmas, did you? Bob Dylan. His name is Bob Zimmerman out of Minnesota. But he took Dylan Thomas's name. He liked that, so he calls Bob Dylan. Al Jolson. There's a label that I don't know if they have any of my music or not. Melissa Manchester. David Lee Roth, lead singer of Van Halen. Country Joe McDonald of Woodstock. Give me an F. Remember that? The fish call? But it wasn't fish. At least not at Woodstock. Bette Midler, Barry Manilow, both Jews. Barry is a... they won't say whether he's homosexual or not. But I would think he... You know, I don't dislike the guy either. I mean, he's not my type of music, but, you know, He seems to be a fairly nice guy, but he was the arranger for Bette Midler, and they played in gay bars, and that's where they got started. Mitch Miller. Can you imagine that? Kenny G. I always knew that. Dinah Shore? Nah! Helen Reddy? Now, I should look at these again, but I was Simon and Garfunkel, always knew that. Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley of Kiss. Paul Stanley's last name is actually Eisen. Buddy Rich, the drummer. Jerry Springer. Now, he's not a musician. I just had to throw this one in. The mayor of Cincinnati, Ohio. And the wonderful guy in the Jerry Springer Show. Can you imagine that? Peter Yarrow of Peter, Paul, and Mary, 1970 conviction for improper liberties with a 14-year-old girl. He spent 3 months in jail. And Jimmy Carter granted him clemency. George Gershwin. Irving Berlin. I love Irving Berlin. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. I know you had enough of that. Harold Arlen. Born Hyman Arlock and Yip Harburg. They're the gentleman that wrote Somewhere Over the Rainbow. One of the most beautiful songs ever written. Pat Benatar, I remember reading that years ago. Cass Elliott of the Mamas and Papas, I didn't know that. Billy Joel, I did know. A lot of people thought he was Italian, right? No, he's Jewish. Elvis Presley's mother and grandmother are Jewish. From what I've read, it's hard to believe. Even Elvis's mother's tombstone has a Star of David on it. I never knew it. Elvis was a Christian. He was a good Christian man, too. I mean, he had his faults, but he was a Christian. Carly Simon, remember Simon & Schuster, the big publisher? Guess who's the daughter? How did she ever make it in the music business? How about that? Call up Uncle Such and Such, he'll get you on the record label. Carol King from the Brill Building. Irving Azoff, MCA. I believe he's Jewish. I could not find exactly. Neil Bogart, born in New York City as Neil Bogatz. Casablanca Records. I'll bet you he's Jewish. I couldn't find exactly. Edgar Bronfman, Jr., of course. Leonard Chess of Chess Records, if you remember that, is born Litzer Szasz, I think Polish. And that's a Polish Jew. Simon Cowell, of course. Clive Davis of Sony, born in Brooklyn. Lou Adler, Dunhill Records. David Geffen, homosexual Jew and co-founder of DreamWorks. And he found Asylum Records. Probably belongs there, too. Anyway, music by country. The United States has 35% of all the sales. And Japan, 19%. UK, 9%. And France and Germany, about 6% each. So it's gone down. They've lost about a third of their sales from 2001 to 2010 in Japan alone. CDs were down about 46%. So the music business is in trouble. As I gather information from the show, just to give you an idea, I get stuff from Google, YouTube, Wikipedia, Facebook. Jewish, 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 Jewish. Performing Arts, Performing Rights Organizations, ASCAP. I'm a member of ASCAP. For many years, it's headed by Marilyn and Alan Bergman, Jews. Her last name is Katz, as her maiden name, K-A-T-Z. And she's currently on the board. She's a lyricist, a Jew. She runs the things. 1996, ASCAP threatened to sue the Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts that sang copyrighted works at their camp gatherings. Finally, with the outrage of the public, they backed down. That's the only reason why they did. They couldn't have the Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts singing their songs. Can you imagine that? Then you got BMI. It was created by the national broadcasters because ASCAP got so powerful, they had a monopoly. CSAC was a big favorite of contemporary Christian music. In about 1994, it was bought out by some suspicious investors and shifted towards mainstream. Anyway, the Jewish-owned media, that includes music and newspapers and everything, there's only six companies that own 96% of all the world media. Number one, Vivendi, Universal Music, Universal Studios, 60 publishing houses, Time Warner, AOL, CNN, Cable TV, Disney, ABC, News Corporation, Fox TV, newspapers, magazines, Viacom, I think that's Sumner's. One, CBS, MTV, Nickelodeon, Paramount Pictures, Bartlesman, ad agencies, Random House Publishing, Barnes & Noble, 80 magazines worldwide, and 9 newspapers in Europe. Now, I was told this is a Jewish company. It was started by Germans, but I'm not sure of that. Anyway, I'm gonna close on a guy that is the top record executive with Warner Music Group. This is concerning a Rolling Stone magazine article on 6/21 of 2001, about 11 years ago. Ironically, the guy that wrote this was Rich Cohen, and he's writing about his hero here, Lior Cohen. Lior is L-Y-O-R, whether he pronounces it Lear or Lore, whatever. I'm going to call him Lior Cohen. It looks like Lior to me, and I know he is because his last name's Cohen. But Lior Cohen, I'm going to read this real quick. It's just 2 pages long. You got to read this. I got about a little less than 5 minutes to go here, so I want you to hear this. Cohen is something different. This is part of the article. I'm just going to read the best part. This is a white executive, in on the ground floor of the music business who has a true feel and love for hip-hop. which he has viewed from the beginning as a key to the secret life of his age. I was never excluded, he says. I was always seen as a contributor. White people had more problems with me than black people. I should hope they would. They said, how can you record this music? But I view myself as David with his slingshot looking for a forehead to bust. Isn't that nice? Every day I wake up justified for David to face Goliath. You need conviction. Oh, man. Okay. Liar is probably the coolest white dude in the game, says Irv Gotti, a black record producer who works for Jay-Z and DMX. Bad people. He's a white Jewish guy. Well, let's just say he's a Jewish guy. But I think everybody respects him like he's black. Oh, to have respect, you got to be black. He knows how to carry it, too. He knows how to get gangster, how to fall back, when to shut the F-U-C-K up, when to say something. That's why other white executives are scared of him. He knows how to deal with the hoods, the criminal element, end quote. Can you give it the criminal element? That's what you have to do. In 94, Simmons and Cohen sold half of Def Jam to Polygram for $33 million. Seagram then bought Polygram and in 1999 went on to buy the rest of Def Jam for more than $130 million, making Mr. Cohen, at 40, a rich man. Well, he was rich when he sold it for $33 million in 94. See how things are getting crazy? He is now president of the Island Def Jam Music Group, in addition to recruiting and signing bands, because he's such an expert, traveling the world to support stars and jumpstart prospects. Cohen oversees an empire that includes hundreds of artists performing in dozens of genres, a roster that features B.J. Harvey, American Hi-Fi, Shelby Lynn, Lionel Richie, Bon Jovi, Melissa Etheridge, Saliva, Ludacris, Kelly Price, and Cisco. But in the coming months, he will be expected for the first time in his career to break acts far outside the world of hip-hop and R&B and prove he can nurture careers, blah, blah, blah. It has gotten to the point in music where everything influences everything, says Josie Scott of the Memphis metal band Saliva. I'm going to skip over this here. I'm going to go to Cohen has vowed to expand the scope of hip-hop, lucky us, bringing what has always been a product of the American city to the former Eastern Bloc, lucky them. To me, it seems very natural, says Cohen. Yeah, natural to you. If you're a young man from East Germany, oh, come on, leave him alone. You're going to have to tear apart these lyrics, same as you look at Public Enemy, you know, what it's like to be black in America in the 80s. Oh, for crime, at least. Anyway, when I reach the front, at the very end, he's called Little Lansky, obviously in reference to Jewish gangster Meyer Lansky. So that's a point of pride, to be a cold-blooded murderer and to brag about your Little Lansky. Anyway, folks, I have lots more, but we're running out of time. Next week, I don't know what we're going to be talking about, but it's going to be a good one. I love you all. I hope you love the show. Give us some feedback of what you like to hear, and we're going to cover everything. I'm going to have an announcement next week on some of our musicians in this world and how they can create a culture right here on the White Network. God bless. See you later. Every morning.